Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on Out of This World information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, UFOs, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee you it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I want to say a big hello to our friends in Canada, the United Kingdom, Switzerland, and in Europe, who I know are listening. Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren, und meine Freunde. But before we start, I'd like to ask all of my listeners, both here in the United States, Canada, and Europe, to send good thoughts and good wishes and prayers to Susan Miller in New York. She's one of the world's best astrologers, and she's not been feeling well. And I'd really appreciate it if you could send her all your good prayers and good thoughts to help her feel better. Also, Dr. Stanley Monteith was on my program a few months ago. He has been diagnosed with cancer, and if you could send him some good thoughts and good wishes, I know those good thoughts will help him too. Today we have a split show that I guarantee will be really out of this world. From now until 3 p.m. for the first hour, we'll be speaking with nationally known author Dr. Jerry Corsi on his newest book, entitled Hunting Hitler. Jerry will be on in a few minutes. And then at the 3 o'clock hour, we'll be interviewing John Lear from Nevada. Mr. Lear will be discussing various incredible conspiracy theories relating to what really caused Fukushima, the hidden reasons behind 9/11, hidden bases on the moon, and a new email he just emailed me today about an underwater base off the California coast. It's pretty interesting. I want to thank you all for listening, and we will be taking call-ins after 2:30 p.m. I wanted to give out our studio numbers. Our call-in number here is area code 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington, 1-888-298-5569. And before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, a business professor at Walla Walla Community College, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer Eric and my station manager Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. Let's go to Jerry Corsi in New Jersey, we'll start our interview.
We've got Jerry on the line if you want to say hello to him.
Okay, great. Hello, Jerry. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Oh, fine. You've had an amazing career, and you've gone into areas where other people haven't, and you've certainly raised the consciousness of so many people regarding world events and things that others just haven't looked at. I want to start the interview with a little bit about your background, Jerry. You received a PhD from Harvard University in political science in 1972. You are currently a senior staff reporter for World Neck Daily, where you work as an investigative reporter. In 2004, you co-authored the number one New York Times bestseller, Unfit for Command. And also, too, this success permitted you to make a career change into full-time writing in politics and economics. And you've written 5 New York Times best-selling nonfiction books, including your most recent book, Hunting Hitler. I've read your book, Jerry, and it was certainly an eye-opener from what I've learned earlier in life about what happened to Hitler.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I've done a lot of research on it. It's Hitler. The common assumption is that Hitler committed suicide at the end of World War II in the bunker in Berlin with his mistress Eva Braun, and that's been reported as the traditional historical account. But when you look at what got my interest was that one of the scientists from Connecticut State archaeologist, was allowed in Russia to examine Hitler's skull that Russia has had in the archives since the end of World War II as proof that Hitler committed suicide. And the DNA testing on the skull showed that it was the skull actually of a 40-year-old woman, which clearly means that it could not have been Hitler's skull. And it, you know, of course, that raises the issue if the Russians had this data, which was fraudulent, then maybe in fact Hitler didn't die at the end of World War II, but escaped. And the common place where he escaped to was been assumed to be Argentina. That's been the, you know, the backstory believed widely in Argentina for since the end of World War II. So, you know, I started investigating this based upon that scientific finding that the skull that was in the Moscow archives represented to be Hitler's skull didn't belong to Hitler.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And this led you to your book. Now, your book's fascinating, Jerry, and I urge all my listeners to get a copy and be sure to read it. It's certainly earthbreaking material, investigative reporting of the finest quality I've ever seen. The book is called Hunting Hitler, and to order the book, you can go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Simply click on the sites, the links to Jerry's website, and then it talks more about the book. And I think the book is available on Amazon.com and all Marji bookstores.
That's right. It's Amazon.com, widely available in bookstores. If the bookstore doesn't have it, they'll get it for you. But the book is Hunting Hitler, and it's published by Skyhorse Publishing.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Now, in your book, you talk about... you go through the theories that were advanced right after the war regarding Hitler's demise, and then you carefully take those piece by piece apart and show that they're false. There was one gentleman, I think it was the feeling after World War II. Now, I was born in 1954, so I wasn't alive at that time, but was the feeling at the end of World War II, the Allies, I assume, just wanted to get this behind them? Is that why they didn't go after Hitler? Why do you think they didn't go after Hitler more vigorously after the war?
Well, I mean, first of all, Hitler was reported to have been dead. At the end of World War II, the U.S. Army was advancing from the west on Berlin, but the Russians got to Berlin first. And when the Russians got to Berlin, Berlin was rubble. Russia was shelling and with artillery fire and bombing, you know, from the air Berlin. So the bunker was in the middle of rubble, close to the Reich Chancellery, but in rubble. And of course, one of the first things the Russians who got to the bunker, one of the Russian army, wanted to do was to find Hitler. Because remember, you know, Hitler had killed, you know, tens of millions of Russians. And of course, the Russian people wanted justice. And in the confusion of Berlin at this time, with the Third Reich falling, with the Russian army advancing, chaos of all the violent warfare that had hit Berlin, in the rubble they found a corpse, the Russian army did, and at first they photographed the corpse and it turned out to be a Hitler double. The Russians were duped initially by a Hitler double the Germans had put there. And then within a few days the Russian army had specialists come in and they identified a corpse that they said was Hitler's corpse, an Eva Braun's corpse. Now, these two corpses, the Russians said had been, you know, suicide, shot in the head or taken cyanide capsules, and that Russia, you know, found in the garden outside the chancellery in this little kind of shallow grave that the bodies had been doused with gasoline and burned, and the bodies were recovered and brought back first into Germany and then back to Russia for testing, and Russia conducted autopsies, and they declared that these were the bodies of Hitler and Eva Braun, and that they had committed suicide. So the official Russian story from the end of World War II was always that Hitler died in the bunker of a joint suicide with Eva Braun. The bodies had been taken out by the Nazis in the bunker, outside the bunker, doused with gasoline, burned. The bodies had not been fully cremated, and the remains were found by the Russians, who identified the bodies from dental records as belonging to Hitler and Eva Braun. But, you know, the more I got into it and did the research, and I ended up studying in great depth what has been released from Russia, it's clear that, first of all, the dental records, the Russians had captured the dental technicians of Hitler and Eva Braun, and all the records existed. It would have been very easy to duplicate the dental, you know, fixtures and put them in the mouths of these cadavers.
Right.
There were technical problems with the cadavers. I mean, the Eva Braun corpse showed signs of hematoma bleeding from being hit by an artillery shell, but yet if she had committed suicide by, you know, shooting herself or taking cyanide, the body would have been dead and it would not have bled no matter how many times it was hit by an artillery shell. So the autopsy records leave considerable reason to doubt that these bodies were actually Hitler, Eva Braun, any more than the skull Russia had was Hitler's skull. The Russians were just desperate to claim that Hitler was dead, and this was their evidence.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, and you go into this in your book and chapter, you do a great job of this, Jerry, fascinating read.
Thank you.
Page 80, it's just incredible. I always like good scholarship, and it's always nice to see someone who's done really good work like you have. You talk about he had help, didn't he? I mean, it wasn't World War II. Seems like it was good versus bad, black versus white versus black kind of situation. But Hitler had help, didn't he? His rise to power, they had help came from the United States.
Well, I document in the book, and it was one of the, you know, dirty secrets of World War II is that the United States Wall Street, we financed Hitler's rise to power before World War II.
Incredible.
You know, some of the tips on this was that Hitler, at the Potsdam meeting right after World War II, got Jimmy Burns, who was Secretary of State under Truman right at the end of the war, aside, and Stalin said that, and this is recorded by Jimmy Burns in one of his books, Speaking Frankly, that Stalin told him that, despite what Russia says, that Stalin personally did not believe that Hitler died in the bunker, didn't believe any of this story of the suicide. And in fact, Stalin was saying to Jimmy Burns, Secretary of State under Truman, U.S. Secretary of State, that we had helped Hitler escape, and that's what Stalin believed. Well, when you start looking at the backstory, we had financed Hitler's rise to power, Wall Street did, and going back into the 1930s, and it was done by Alan Dulles, who, you know, ended up being heading the CIA under Eisenhower. Well, Alan Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles, who was the Secretary of State under Eisenhower, in the 30s had worked with Brown Brothers Harriman, a New York investment banking firm, and they were financing Hitler in Germany, in Hitler's rise to power going back to the 30s.
Amazing.
And this chapter of history has largely been held for the American people. Most people know nothing about this, but yet the documentary evidence, the evidence in the archives, is ample that this is the case. And Alan Dulles was in Bern, Switzerland during World War II, working with the OSS and helping the Nazis get their money out of Germany and putting it into Argentina and the U.S. stock market, which is pretty shocking.
Amazing.
During the end of World War II, helping the Nazis escape. We not only, you know, the Dulles brothers and Alan Dulles' brother, you know, John Foster Dulles, involved in this whole process, is the Secretary of State after whom Dulles Airport is named in Washington. You know, very revered figures helped Hitler rise to power and also facilitated the escape of Nazis at the end of World War II. It's a shocking story that most people wouldn't believe, but I defy you to look at the evidence I produced because I think it's pretty clear that it's true.
Well, you know, we have Memorial Day coming up this weekend, Jerry, and I contacted the Veterans of Foreign Wars and numerous other veterans organizations about today's radio program because still, I think there's still, of course, people who are still alive from the Greatest Generation who fought in World War II, and I frankly think that they would be shocked to find out about our involvement in actually helping Hitler in the rise of power.
I would think so. I mean, coming on Memorial Day, I guess it's particularly shocking, but this is coming to light now. I mean, Bormann, who was the number two to Hitler in terms of his internal staff, he was secretary to Hitler, Martin Bormann, came to the conclusion in 1943 that it was very likely that Hitler was going to lose the war. And, you know, seeing that this was going to be the case, Bormann, realizing the Nazis had plundered all these billions and billions from, you know, the countries that they had taken over, from the Jews who went to the concentration camp, Bormann started working together with Alan Dulles in Bern, Switzerland, and put together what he called Aktion Alderflug, which was Project Eagle Flight, which was designed to transfer German loot, the money, whether, you know, counterfeit, stolen, legitimate government funds, whatever they had, to safe havens abroad. So between 1943 and 1945, Bormann funded more than 200 German companies in Argentina, and he started making investments in the U.S. stock market, as well as companies in Portugal, Spain, Sweden, and Turkey. Bormann's estimated to have created some 980 front companies outside Germany, including 98 front companies in Argentina alone, and Alan Dulles helped him transfer the money and make these transactions with financial agents working on Germany's behalf in Switzerland.
Amazing.
This was, I mean, when you think about it, a large part of the post-war boom that we experienced in the United States came from looted Nazi wealth that we had helped Hitler, through the Dulles brothers, move out of Germany before the war ended. That's the truth.
Oh my God, what a revelation.
And as part of this whole deal, what I say is the documentary evidence, again, as I went into the archives, shows that part of the deal that was made in transferring all this money with the Dulles brothers was that many of the Nazis would escape, not just a few, but tens of thousands would escape, and paths and ways for them were set up to escape, including that Hitler would get away. And, you know, this was a part of the deal negotiated, and that we agreed to it, and the Dulles brothers agreed to it, because it allowed all this money to come into the United States stock market and into Argentina. And the Dulleses were anti-communist, and they felt that at the end of World War II, they were framing already the Cold War, the Dulles brothers, and they felt that we would need all the Nazi money and all the Nazi help we could get to defeat Russia and communism, including over the Galen's SS operation, which was a Nazi SS operation that Alan Dulles brought in to help form the CIA and was the bedrock of West German intelligence through the post-war period.
Right. I was just going to ask you about that. That's true. And there was also, that was part of what was called Operation Paperclip, wasn't it? Where they brought in Nazi, the intelligence officers and also the rocket scientists to help with our space program.
Yeah, specifically what Operation Paperclip was an OSS and then CIA operation to bring in scientists, technicians, engineers from Nazi Germany to work in the United States, you know, with full clearance and ultimately citizenship and papers and all the rest, even though they were Nazis, even though many of these Nazi scientists and technicians had used labor from Jewish slave labor from the concentration camps, it was all forgiven. And the Dulles is organized bringing over at least 1,000, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 scientists, technicians to the United States from Nazi Germany, including Wernher von Braun, who headed our space program through the Kennedy years and was the engineer who designed the V-2 terror rockets that Germany launched on England and built with slave labor under von Braun's direction.
Well, I know for the 6 million Jews who were exterminated in World War II, including some of the members of my family in Germany, these memories Die Hard. And
it's a horrifying story. I mean, it's a story of, you know, moral compromise.
Mm-hmm.
The Dulleses might have thought they were preparing the way to fight communism, but how do you overlook, you know, the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust by the Nazi, you know, criminals that you're saying, oh, they're not so bad because we can use them with our space program and other technical applications, or we need their intelligence operation to fight the Russians, or we want their money to fund our post-war economic development. I mean, that's basically what the Dulleses were saying.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, about 10 years ago, Jerry, I'm sure you know about this work, there was an author, a researcher, who did an extensive research of the history of International Business Machines, or IBM.
Yes.
And they, for people, my listeners who don't realize this, for those who went to a concentration camp, a Nazi concentration camp, the little numbers tattooed on your arm or on your forehead came from, guess where? International Business Machines, IBM. They had a French subsidiary based in Paris, France, where they were making tons of money from the Nazis for doing this numerical system for keeping track of all the inmates across Germany and Poland and other parts of Europe.
Well, that's right. I mean, IBM also did the card system that was used by the Nazis in creating the censuses. I mean, by the time the Nazis were beginning to round up the Jews in the Holocaust, the Nazis were so good at record keeping and censuses that they not only knew what property the Jews owned, but they could say, that necklace you had used to be in this dresser drawer. Where is it now? Because the data collected and often recorded in IBM punch cards, the early punch cards of the day, were all designed to create an information base on the citizenry that ultimately became part of the extermination of the Jews and confiscating their wealth that was core to the Nazi evil.
Well, there was something else many people don't realize, and I just discovered this some years ago, that there was an American oil company during the war that actively provided American petroleum in Aruba to Nazi U-boats, because they would come into to Aruba, which was a Dutch colony. Of course, Hitler had taken over Holland. And so all the documentaries on U-boats during the war who were operating U.S. waters never asked the key question. If these boats are let's say, 5,000 or 6,000 miles away from France, away from Germany, where did they get their fuel to refuel? They got them from this little island in the Caribbean, and the oil was supposedly provided by an American oil company. And the crazy thing is that these U-boats would go ahead and then attack American shipping, killing American people, American sailors, American military.
I mean, if you take a look at the complicity, and I wrote about it in this Hunting Hitler, because I think it helps people understand that, you know, the story that Hitler committed suicide with Eva Braun was a cover story that U.S. intelligence concocted at the end of the war. I even found some of the documents where the U.S. military intelligence were creating a story. The initial U.S. military intelligence believed that Hitler had escaped. That's in the documents in the archives. The initial Germans interviewed said, you're all crazy if you believe the story that, you know, Adolf Hitler didn't suddenly decide after he killed, 50 or 60 million people that he was feeling remorse and he better marry his mistress and sign a will, and then shoot himself. I mean, you know, it was a pathetically ridiculous story when you look at it from the light of, you know, cold analysis. And the U.S. military was being told this, military intelligence, by the Nazis they were interviewing at the end of World War II. We just changed the story around because it was going to be a lot more convenient, especially when Stalin was onto the fact that we were collaborating and working with the Nazis to take their wealth and their scientists and their intelligence operations and bring them to the United States. Stalin was about ready to blow that whistle. Well, then Hitler better be dead, or the next thing that was going to come out was that we'd helped Hitler escape. And how is that going to go down in a world where, you know, how many mothers and, you know, how many sons and husbands and brothers and cousins died fighting the Nazis, and it turned out that, in fact, the whole thing had been kind of engineered by the United States from the very beginning, with us, Wall Street, helping Hitler rise to power and working with the Nazis on money and technical issues right to the end. But there's no way you could tell that story to the American people at the end of World War II. In fact, even today it's hard to tell that story to the American people because no one wants to believe it.
Right, right. Well, mind you, I don't think any Americans in this country, the capitalism is the basis for our economy, and there's nothing wrong with the capitalism. It's made it help make America what the great country it is today. But I think when companies knowingly make money off of other people's suffering and commit heinous crimes like the Holocaust in order to make profits, that's where the buck stops. That's where they should wake up.
It's not an indictment, I don't think, so much of capitalism. It's an indictment of people like the Dulles brothers who, in retrospect, had no morals when it came to these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Their morals were dollars. Their morals were defeating communism. They were so tied into that goal and created this, post-war Cold War in which defeating communism was the paramount goal. They were willing to do anything necessary, including working with the devil, which I take to be working with Hitler, in order to achieve their goal of defeating communism. I mean, you can't, our country, especially going into Memorial Day, is not founded on callous principles of advantage and wealth. Our founding fathers believed in God and had morals, and believed that our founding system, if used correctly, was designed to perpetuate belief in God, Judeo-Christian tradition, and liberal democracy, which is a republic, a constitutional republic, which is what we were bequeathed by our founding fathers. Well, any system of government can be perverted, by avarice or evil, and I think the Dulles brothers represent a chapter of Hitler's escaping, shows, the government disinformation that we have been fed, even by our own government, and I believe continue to be fed, and I think it's a wake-up call for us all to be vigilant to restore government to its original moral purposes of the founding fathers. That's what I think this story is about.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jerry. I just want to make an announcement that for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. We're very grateful to have today on the show Jerome Corsi. He is he's been writing at least 5 New York Times best-selling nonfiction books, including we're discussing his most recent book, Hunting Hitler. For those of you who'd like to call in, our telephone number here is area code 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington. Our phone number is 1-888-298-5569, toll-free within Western Washington. Jerry, I've heard the logistics of when Hitler escaped was on April 26th, where he allegedly took a... Do you know much about how logistically he got away? There was some helicopter he took...
What I document in the book, and again, I did a lot of research in Argentina and the Argentinian sources.
Mm-hmm.
And there's archives in Argentina and, books written on it. In fact, even some documentaries done of Hitler escaping to Argentina, and interviews with people who claim to have known Hitler in Argentina. At any rate, there was the Nazis had helicopters at the end of World War II, and the evidence is that Hitler was taken out of the bunker by a helicopter, and he was flown into Austria. And then from there, the helicopter was an FA-223 Focke Angelus, and he was taken to Linz, Austria, and then flown to Barcelona, Spain on April 26, 1945. And you know, the records in Argentina even identify he went in a Junkers 290A6 airplane that was supposedly piloted by the highly decorated German Luftwaffe bomber pilot, Werner Baumbach, you know, who writes about it also in one of his autobiographies, talks about how, you know, the German airlines and Luftwaffe was capable of reaching vast areas of the world, even at the end of World War II. And then the, you know, Baumbach mentioned in his autobiographical book, Broken Swastika, that he was in Berlin on April 21st to meet with Speer, Albert Speer, and he says that we've fixed up long-range aircraft and flying boats so that we could get anywhere on Earth. Baumbach says that at the end of World War II. Well, and then Hitler was flown to Barcelona and put on this submarine, the U-530, which ends up surfacing in Mar del Plata in Argentina on July 10, 1945. Now, what I found in the archives in Washington were all the records of the submarine landing in Argentina. And there's extensive records.
Amazing.
You know, the U.S. Naval Intelligence, I even show you in the book, the memorandum that was written, was July 18, 1945. The U.S. Naval Attaché in Buenos Aires wrote back to Washington saying that this submarine had been sighted along by the Argentinian Navy along the coast, and it was landing in July 1945 and offloading by means of a raft, evidently VIPs on shore, and that it was going to come into the, it was known to come into the Mar del Plata with a reduced crew because part of the crew got offloaded as well. And the U.S. Naval Intelligence reported back to Washington that Eva Braun and Adolf Hitler were landed in the south of Argentina, they believed, on this U-boat, that's what was widely being said in Argentina at the time.
Amazing.
And that's on a U.S. military attaché report. The actual report is in the archives. I show you it in the book. I took a scan of it, and I reproduce it in the book. So you can see that U.S. military intelligence was told that Hitler was on this U-boat, and the crew, I've got pictures of the crew in here and their fingerprint cards. The crew ended up having in its list of possessions Argentinian cigarettes and Argentinian money and Spanish-German dictionaries. So clearly this crew was planning and had offloaded. And by the way, the raft was missing on the submarine when it got to Mar del Plata.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I found an article in the Stars and Stripes, which was the U.S. military publication during World War II, from October 8, 1945. And in it, Dateline London, it's an Associated Press, just a little box, and said, there's, quote, reason to believe that Hitler may still be alive, according to a remark made by General Eisenhower to Dutch newspapers. The general statement reversed his previous opinion that Hitler was dead. Now, that was in October 45, and Hitler was supposed to have committed suicide in April 45.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, I have to ask you this question. Let's say that the government, our government, federal government, and the military knew that Hitler was, in fact, alive in Argentina along with Eva Braun. And there are reports that they both lived a natural life, with Hitler perhaps passing away of natural causes in 65, and Eva Braun, I've heard she lived up until right around the year 2000 or perhaps past that, a ripe old age in Argentina. Why do you think our government didn't want to go after him or have the world go after him at that point?
Well, because we would have had to have revealed the lies, you know, that we'd helped them escape.
Mm-hmm.
If you found Hitler, you have to say, well, how'd he get there?
Mm-hmm.
And Stalin had already made it clear he's going to say, well, you guys helped him.
Right.
He took Galen's organization, took all these, you know, SS intelligence officers. And remember, Galen's organization were SS. They ran the death camps.
Right.
We took them over and made them into partly into the CIA and partly West German intelligence. We had, you know, Bormann's money into Argentina and into the stock market. Do we really want an investigation of how much money came through Nazi Germany of stolen Jewish wealth, people who were incinerated in the Holocaust, countries that Hitler had plundered, stolen their gold, ends up in the U.S. stock market? Do we really want to have that investigated? It's better that anybody who dares to say Hitler lives would be ridiculed and made to, you know, because that's how disinformation, government disinformation works. If you dare to expose it, risk having yourself be, you know, subject to calumny and everything else the government will do so people don't listen to what you've said. I think what makes my book, Hunting Hitler, so compelling is I show you the documentary evidence out of the archives. And when you can get documents where the U.S. military, you know, documents written by a U.S. Naval Military Intelligence attaché in Buenos Aires, 1945, doesn't think anybody's ever going to read outside the government, tells Washington, you know, we think Hitler was on this boat.
Right.
That document somehow manages to survive yet today in the National Archives, and I find it.
Amazing, Jerry. Thank you so much for your excellent research and your book. The other questions I have is that look at the legacy of this of what happened after World War II. So apparently, our banking institutions and our stock brokerage firms, we take this Nazi money, and apparently have a post World War II boom as a result of the plundered loot that the Nazis had gotten through slaughtering 6 million Jews and lots of millions of other people. But more than that, look what's happened to our country since then. Of course, in 1963, November 22nd, our beloved president John F. Kennedy was murdered. Some say the CIA did it. And if these Nazis did in fact start our CIA, no wonder we have problems with the Central Intelligence Agency today. No wonder we have problems with secrecy in the government today. Look at the legacy.
If you read my another book I wrote, which is Who Killed JFK? I wrote that last year and came out at the time of the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination. Mm-hmm. I argue that, you know, JFK was killed in part by Alan Dulles, whom JFK fired from the CIA, because JFK would not fight Alan Dulles in this New World Order crowd's lying CIA wars that were aimed against communism. You know, JFK believed that all these wars in Southeast Asia were primarily a CIA attempt to force the United States into a war we could never win. It was not in our national security interest. Kennedy had not fought in Laos, and he was not going to fight in Vietnam. And the Dulleses were over here building in the State Department under Eisenhower and CIA, a Cold War against Russia, pitting us against communism, that was in their imaginations, you know, somehow in the destiny of the United States to needed to survive. Well, JFK didn't believe that. Didn't think we needed to fight a war that was in our national interest. He was much more of a fundamental constitutionalist. They didn't like to be lied to. And Kennedy knew the complicity of Alan Dulles in supporting Hitler. He knew his own father's complicity in supporting Hitler in the 30s. But Kennedy rose above it, and he said, we're going to put an end to this. And I think Kennedy was the first martyr in this new world order globalism, which is the remember, the Nazis were socialists. They were national socialists. They wanted much of what we have today, a government-controlled economy with a, you know, Hitler was the first to introduce national health insurance. It was not Obama. Hitler had a socialized medicine plan he introduced in Germany in the 30s. That was the whole idea. The Nazis were going to have a government-run economy fueled by lying wars that would keep economic growth, and anybody who didn't agree with it would face the Gestapo and the death camps.
Do you see trends, those same trends in this country today, Jerry?
Well, that's both these books, my Hunting Hitler and my Who Really Killed JFK, the underlying themes are to realize how intelligence agencies, the forces that the Wall Street that financed Hitler, all of these powers were trying to transform the United States into the National Socialism that Hitler wanted. Mm-hmm. Hitler thought he could come into a Europe that was run by the EU, where Germany would head it without firing a shot. Mm-hmm. We'd have the CIA and the NSA to supply him all the information he needed, and that he could introduce nationalized, socialized medicine if he wanted to be a social net for all those who wouldn't really benefit from his corporate state. The elitists. Hitler would have signed up in a minute.
Mm-hmm. I had Daniel Brinkley on a couple of months ago. He's one of the best-known psychics in the United States, if not the world. And Daniel was saying on air that he thought that the Obamacare was just it was a ruse to gain control over the American public, because when you sign up for Obamacare, the records first go to the FBI, second they go to Homeland Security, third they go to the healthcare provider, and then fourth they go to the IRS. So basically you have these layers and layers of control over people. So once the system is totally in place, you'll have a people who are controlled by the federal government. That's what
and then all your medical records are going to be on computer. So
that's true.
Try to get rid of a problem you had that's now gone away, or, say a psychiatric issue that came up in your past that's not current.
Sure.
Well, you're
sure.
Never going to get rid of that.
Let's say you're having a tough time in life. A lot of people are having a tough time out there. The economy's not the greatest, and they have depression. So they get treated for depression.
It's in your permanent record. Known to the IRS.
Permanent record.
And the CIA and any other government agency that wants to look at it.
Sure, sure. And what's telling is that for these insurance companies, it's a cash cow. Imagine. And some of the plans for Obamacare, there's a $10,000 deductible for it. And yet,
sure,
you're stuck for $600 or $1,000 a month. I don't know what the premiums are, but I know they're high.
What about the NSA and the CIA and recording every phone call and having a CIA with a secret budget that doesn't have to tell the American public what it does, even though we now know, going back into the 60s, the CIA staged assassinations, staged coups in other countries,
lied
to the American people.
Sure.
And I write about that extensively and in my book on JFK, and that's what this book about Hitler, Hunting Hitler, is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
anybody who dares expose that the government is lying is immediately branded as a kook and nutcase, even though I've got all the documents and evidence. They'll hold on to their cover story that Hitler committed suicide, even though, as I point out in the book, the Russians and the United States could not get agreement among the supposed eyewitnesses as to the same story. They all told different stories.
Right.
One had Hitler shooting himself, the other had him taking cyanide. It was all conflicting testimonies. And then we find out the skull in Russia that was supposedly Hitler's skull was really a 40-year-old woman. The DNA samples, once it's finally taken. And how many government lies are we going to put up with?
Right. Well, I agree totally, Jerry. And one thing, too, that, of course, if people are familiar with the U.S. Constitution and their state constitution, Washington State Constitution, there's something called the Fourth Amendment, which guarantees people's right to privacy. But if you look at that amendment, and you look at both the federal amendment and also the state amendment, it's like it's worthless. It's like a worthless piece of paper. And I want to bring up this example for everyone out there, just as kind of an interesting thing to think about. Years ago, I used to travel every once in a while to Europe, to Germany, and I'd visit Berlin. I'd go into East Berlin, and I became interested in their constitution. They actually had it's called the Deutsche Demokratic Republic, and in East Germany they had a Bill of Rights. It was patterned after the U.S. Constitution with all of our rights, but yet in East Germany at the time, this is back in the 70s, If you had freedom of speech, if you protested anything, you'd be arrested and sent away to some sort of gulag prison. And in this country now, what good is the Fourth Amendment written on paper if it doesn't have any teeth in it, if the courts aren't willing to enforce it? If the NSA is recording every single conversation by telephone, by text, by email of you ever utter, the next thing they'll do, mark my words, then they'll find out, they'll have technology which will read your thoughts and they'll record that as well. It'll be like the thought police.
Well, and also, you get picked up for a minor offense. They've got all these records. Go back and read Kafka and other people, you know, show the kinds of interrogations these state police do once they have a file on you. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does our government need collecting all this information on citizens for? Now, Hitler would have loved it. The Gestapo would have loved it. I mean, they were already, you know, in the 30s in the IBM punch cards and all the technology to record their data.
Sure.
Go to the shocking thing about the Nazi archives is the degree to which they documented what went on in the death camps. Why would they document this horrible, you know, murdering 6 million people? But they record the names of the Jews. They, you know, have all the technical stuff about who they were, where they came from, what they did in the camps, records of what happened day by day, roll calls. The records are shocking because they got compelled to keep this information, and that's what they, and that's what we're doing. We collect everything and keep it,
right,
even insignificant data. And there's no reason in a constitutional republic with liberties that we need this information. Our founding fathers created barriers to prevent the government from creating this type of a government spy state on the citizens. And yet what I'm pointing out in books like Hunting Hitler is that the lying by our government started, you know, clearly World War II, here it is, the great lie told that Hitler died. Well, he, in covering up the fact that we helped the Nazis, tens of thousands of them survive and survive very well in the United States.
Right.
Get here and survive as citizens. Prosper.
Right. Well, and what you've just said, Jerry, leads to another question. Do we have a constitutional republic?
That was Benjamin Franklin's big question. You know, you have a constitutional republic if you can keep it. Mm-hmm. Today, I increasingly doubt that we're keeping it. And then when you look at the voting that is done by people who are not informed of the issues, who are not thinking to preserve their freedoms. I mean, you know, for the price of an Obama phone and for, you know, open flagrance of voting laws, win elections, and then you see the double standard, you know, the prosecution of anybody on the right, like this Dinesh D'Souza, who I've been reporting on, the filmmaker, technical violation. Yes, he violated the law. He bundled two $10,000 contributions. But what about Harry Reid, who took $30,000 of his campaign funds and used it to buy jewelry in his daughter's granddaughter's jewelry company?
Amazing. Amazing.
That's supposedly okay.
Yeah, right, right, right.
You know, I mean, the double standard where Eric Holder can say in the Justice Department, I'm not going to enforce this set of laws, but I'm going to enforce these over here.
Right.
And then you look at the ones he's going to enforce, and they're all politically motivated.
Right.
I mean,
again,
justice in the United States is supposed to be blind, not politically favoritism being played.
Well,
These are fundamental issues that go back to secret government agencies that control all this data and feel like they have a license to lie. I mean, look at how hard we've had to work with ISA and the various committees in Congress to get documents. You know, the Obama administration has been saying now for 2 years that nothing happened to Benghazi. And then Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch, with a FOIA request, finally get one memo out of the White House, which shows that from the day Benghazi was happening, the White House political staff is trying to concoct this lie that it was about a movie to maintain you know, the Obama narrative that Al-Qaeda was on the run and GM was alive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and don't forget the NDAA that Obama signed into law a couple of years ago. I'm sure you know about that.
Sure.
For my listeners, we've got a couple minutes left, Jerry. Would you mind telling our listeners what the NDAA is?
Well, you're talking about the give me the exact NDAA.
Oh, the National Defense Authorization Act, where the suspension of civil liberties, civil rights.
In the case of militia, you know, the case of martial law, being it's one that I'm, you know, widely suspected was enacted in order to create FEMA kind of detention camps and thought control camps and put people away under the declaration. I mean, the government's been trying to declare that. The Tea Party is, you know, right-wing radicals are the real terrorists. Mostly, Tea Party members are senior citizens who believe in the Second Amendment and the First Amendment, want constitutional, you know, rights restored, not revolutionaries.
Sure.
But, you know, at the same time, the Obama administration bends over backwards. You can't say Islamic terrorism. Even the Fort Hood shooters, they won't declare to be Islamic terrorists. I mean, these are the kinds of double standards that governments who believe they engage in disinformation. That's why a book, Hunting Hitler, the book, complimentary book I wrote about killing JFK, which I recommend also people read, because I'm exposing how, at the end of World War II, we became National Socialists. And, you know, the work by people I've been reading, you know, Jim Mars, who's been on the subject of the Fourth Reich, and that we became the Fourth Reich. I think these kinds of questions demand serious attention, especially as we dig out more and more documentary evidence out of the archives of the complicity of people like Allen and John Foster Dulles with the Nazis from the beginning of their rise to power.
Jerry, we have a couple of minutes left. I'd like for you to give the parting thoughts to my listeners.
Well, I mean, again, all the writing I'm doing, you'll see on Hitler or JFK is thoroughly documented, heavily footnoted. You know, got sources out of the archives. In the Hunting Hitler book, I actually reproduced some of the documents so you can see with your own eyes the evidence that military intelligence at the end of World War II believed Hitler was alive and that he had gotten by submarine to Argentina. And that information was subsequently suppressed by U.S. government military intelligence disinformation operation designed to sell to the world this Hitler suicide story, which now scientific evidence like the Hitler skull belonging to a 40-year-old woman in the archives of Russia are beginning to show is based upon fabricated evidence.
Well, I find that kind of cover-up unacceptable in a democracy such as the United States, but maybe I'm just naive. Well, Jerry, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the program. I know
my
listeners
have
enjoyed listening to you, my friend. And for those interested in Jerry's books, please go to my website, www.outofthisworld1150.com. You'll see Jerry's name there. His audio will be available later today, and you can click on that. And I urge you to read both his book, Hunting Hitler and Who Killed JFK. They'll both be eye-openers. All right, Jerry, thank you so much for coming on, and you have a good weekend.
Pleasure. You too. Happy Memorial Day, okay?
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.